Hello, and welcome to the Honest Politics Podcast. My name is Alex Gamsik, and I am the founder of Honest Politics, LLC. My company does political consulting, but not for politicians. My services are catered to everyday Americans, just like you and me. So let's get started. So today I'm going to be covering the fourth Democratic debate, which occurred October, and it had 12 people on stage. I thought it was very difficult to have a substantive debate with 12 people on the stage, but it wasn't that bad. They got to more than I thought they would, and some of the exchanges were more informative than some of the previous debates. I'm going to go through the debate in chronological order. So it opened up with the elephant in the room, which was impeachment. Impeachment had been on the news constantly for the last few weeks because the House opened an inquiry regarding the Ukraine scandal that is currently clouding the Trump administration. And all of the candidates seemed really strong for impeachment, except for one or two, most notably Tulsi Gabbard. And you'll hear more about that later. Joe Biden came out with some great points that he raised, but he was stumbling over his words and made an outdated reference to clipping coupons on Wall Street. If you didn't understand that, when you have bonds, bonds make payments over time. And in the olden days, you would get these bond payments in the mail. You would clip off a coupon and then like cash that in as your bond payment. So Joe Biden was using points that were made before computers were a thing. Before computers, you wouldn't have podcasting apps. And speaking of podcasting apps, here is a quick message break. When Pete Buttigieg began speaking, I noticed an immediate shift in his strategy. Before, he'd be using subtlety and showing more than telling his strengths, but now he's out there making a direct case, telling us exactly why he thinks he's the best to be president. He was much more forceful. And Elizabeth Warren became the center of attack throughout the whole debate. I have here early in my notes she was dodging the tax question again and again and again, as she has done previously, by discussing how costs will go down for the middle class using the Medicare for All. But Pete Buttigieg came in and said that his Medicare for All who want it is better than just forcing Medicare on everyone and abolishing private insurance. There was a really great back and forth here, and Pete did a much better job than, say, John Delaney or Michael Bennett of explaining why people, Americans, might want to keep their private insurance, and eliminating the entire thing is pretty radical and extreme. So Pete was using the polling data and showing that, look, Americans by far support a public option plan instead of a Medicare for All plan, including a majority of Democrats. And it helps divide the electability argument, whereas maybe taking these more extreme positions, such as Medicare for All, forced on people, might not do as well in the general election as, say, a public option would. Warren tried to combat that by saying that it was just Medicare for All who could afford it, but Pete raised the point that with subsidies, if it was implemented the way it's supposed to, then it would be affordable for everybody. Klobuchar said that at least Bernie Sanders is being honest when he said that taxes would go up for the middle class, and attacked Elizabeth Warren because she wants a public option as well, just like just like Buttigieg and just like Joe Biden. There's too many people with B names on the stage. A lot of B candidates too, So Joe Biden raised the point that the Medicare for All would cost $30 trillion over the next 10 years, which is more money than the entire federal budget combined. And I was just laughing as this came up because when you look at the federal budget, a huge part of it, the why we have these debts and why we're so behind on paying our debts off, is because of mandatory programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. These gigantic programs cost by far the most of the federal budget. So to force everyone onto Medicare, it would basically double the federal budget, which is pretty insane when you think about it. And then Andrew Yang came in. He stumbled a little bit in the beginning of what he was saying, but he tried to argue with Warren that federal jobs are not what people want. People might not want to work for the federal government. Instead, universal basic income would allow people to play to their own strengths and benefit society that way. Elizabeth Warren tried to say that Social Security is like UBI, universal basic income. And I saw Andrew Yang kind of raise his eyebrows because I have no idea how Social Security is supposed to be like universal basic income. Social Security is only for senior citizens and people with disabilities. The whole universal basic income principle is entirely different from Social Security. The only similarity is that it's paying out money to people, so I don't know what she was trying to talk about there. And Tulsi Gabbard came in supporting universal basic income, which it was surprising to see candidates warming up to that idea, considering it wasn't very popular before. Klobuchar came in to attack Elizabeth Warren as well, saying that your idea is not the only idea. Even the billionaire up here wants to tax billionaires. It's not like Elizabeth Warren has a monopoly on wanting to tax billionaires. This also gets to something that really bugs me sometimes with Democrats is this purity argument wherein the farther to the left you are, the better candidate you are kind of inherently. And that if you don't support basically giving everyone everything they want for free no matter what, then you're a cruel person who doesn't care about X, Y, or Z group. And that might not be true when these other Democrats have big, bold ideas that would be hugely transformative to the economy, but just because they're not trying to give it to everyone completely for free doesn't mean they don't care about people. It's kind of the same way Republicans, just because they want to strip the federal government of programs and funding, they don't necessarily not care about those people. They just think that the private market can substitute and do better for them without government regulations or government programs or taxes. Ideally, everyone would be coming at public policy trying to do the most good. They just have different ways of getting there. And that's what Klobuchar was raising here. Senator Harris was asked about her $6,000 tax credit, which, again, coming back to public policy, a tax credit is much better for people on the lower income scale than a tax cut, because most people don't itemize their taxes. Most people don't get affected when their marginal rate goes down because they're getting tax refunds. They're not, you know, paying net taxes at the end of the year. So a tax credit would literally give a higher refund to people rather than just changing their tax payment from zero to zero. Do you see what I'm saying? There's a long equation that shows discounts, credits, marginal tax rate, and a few other things. It's this long equation that affects how much taxes you're actually paying. And a tax credit is great for people who make less money and don't necessarily itemize their taxes. Therefore, I was excited when Harris was said to propose this deal. However, she immediately went into a personal story and gave a very generalized answer, which leads me to believe she wasn't actually an expert on her own tax policy, and that says enough about the Harris campaign. And then Andrew Yang came in talking about how Warren's wealth tax idea doesn't work too well in other countries like Germany, and says they've discarded that. A value-added tax does better. When Google does a thing or Amazon does a transaction, we all get they get taxed and we get the benefits from that. Yang clearly showed a better mastery of tax policy than a lot of the candidates up there, especially Harris. And even Beto O'Rourke raised giving tax credits like the earned income tax credit. That is the same in line with, like, these tax credits would actually be better for people than just tax cuts. And it goes against Elizabeth Warren's claim that you can just make giant investments that, you know, the funding will just come from wherever and it'll be fine. But Cory Booker came in and said, we should all work together. We shouldn't be fighting like this, which to me rung a little hollow because this is the first debate where we saw really clear, really good policy arguments. And we should be hashing out our differences as long as we're being kind to each other. It's good to draw distinctions during the primary. When the debate shifted to the Syria conflict, you saw a change in the whole tone of the debate. Everyone was very against what Trump was doing. Biden said that all of our commanders are ashamed of what we've done, and it's shameful what Trump has done in the Middle East. You know, you got really strong responses from a lot of people, almost everyone up there. And for about half an hour while this was happening, I thought I was watching a Republican debate. See, when I was a Republican, one of my reasons for doing so was that we had a strong foreign policy. That's not the case anymore. It seems like Democrats are using foreign policy as one of their stronger suits, at least by pointing out what Trump might have done wrong by betraying our allies in Syria. I mean, the Kurds, not necessarily in Syria. The whole Middle Eastern conflict is very complicated, and for someone to come in and say that it's actually very easy to solve just shows the naivety of whoever that person is. And then you had the exchange between Buttigieg and Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard was very against regime change wars. She seems very hesitant to change the regime in Syria where Assad is gassing his own people. Tulsi Gabbard seemed very upset that people didn't like Assad. You might even say that she is friends with Assad or has had dinner with him or refused to denounce Assad during a CNN town hall. On the same night that Buttigieg's town hall led him to surge in the polls, and Tulsi Gabbard remained in the low 1-2% range. It's also kind of rich for Tulsi Gabbard to say that the entire process is rigged against her when both Gabbard and Buttigieg had town halls on the same day in March, about the same time. One surged in the polls due to a great performance, and one did not. So I don't know if the process is rigged or a fair process just seems unfair to some people. Anyway, Buttigieg's strong response to Tulsi Gabbard's platitudes sent chills down my spine, and actually my hairs were on end. I haven't heard a response like that from a politician. He was extremely strong tonight. Bernie Sanders came in again with what shocked me, saying that Turkey is not our ally. For Turkey to be in there committing war crimes against our allies in the fight against ISIS. And of course the PKK, as Trump said, they're not all doves, but they did defeat ISIS for us, and they are holding over 10,000 of them prisoner, as far as that's what I heard. And then Harris came in, and she used female pronouns for the president. She was saying, like, when she decides to send troops into battle or something. And I appreciated her using strictly female pronouns to describe the president because, you know, it's always been male pronouns because they've always been men. But it'd be a good change of pace to have a female president. Castro came in and said, "Why are we jailing kids on the border and letting ISIS members run free in Syria?" And that was a pretty powerful moment for him. That may have been his last great debate moment because I don't see him coming back. Biden came in and highlighted very quickly, for a few seconds, a really strong case for his presidency. He said he spent a lot of time with Putin alone. He spent a lot of time with Turkish President Erdogan alone. And it highlighted probably the greatest case for his presidency, which is that he's done all of this before. And Joe Biden could do what other people could not on that stage by picking up kind of where Obama left off with enough expertise and wisdom that other candidates just don't have because they were not in the White House. Beto was talking about reinvesting in the State Department, which is the diplomacy wing, basically, of the cabinet. And Trump and Pompeo have been trying to slash that as much as they can. Yang had an interesting argument when he said, "We interfered in other elections, and you, Russia, you did in ours, so why don't we all just put our stuff down and focus on future threats?" Klobuchar came in and said, let's not equate Russia and the United States in terms of their morality and what they've done. She had a really strong answer on election interference, and that was kind of a theme throughout the night, is Klobuchar was stronger, much stronger than previous debates. Beto O'Rourke and Buttigieg got in a clash over gun policy, whether mandatory or voluntary, well, basically, mandatory versus voluntary buybacks of assault weapons was a good thing or not. Beto said that people would follow the law, as in once this law was put into place, people would give up their weapons. Other people were saying that wouldn't happen. Buttigieg is trying to make the argument that you needed background checks and red flag laws and that kind of stuff first, and to put mandatory buybacks into the equation weakens the other policy arguments. Beto came in and said, they're not mutually exclusive. We can do all of them at once. And I came kind of thinking that Beto might have had the better argument here. And especially when Buttigieg raised his fingers apart and said, we're this close to an assault weapons ban. He was probably misspeaking. He meant a universal background check and red flag laws. We're still nowhere near close to an assault weapons ban. Biden said he's the only one who's beaten the NRA. What we need is gun registration, like Cory Booker wants, and wants to take away the gun manufacturer's exemption from lawsuits, because fear of lawsuits might actually change the gun lobby and the gun manufacturer's behavior. Andrew Yang was talking about legalizing drugs and having safe places to use drugs, designated safe zones, so that people wouldn't fear going to prison. You know, they would seek treatment instead of hiding their addiction and having more dangerous behaviors just to get high, if you know what I mean. Like shooting up with used needles in a back alley versus going to one of these safe zones with safe equipment and supervision and the potential to get help. And then Beto said we should be giving people weed, not pills, basically. And Bernie said he's not on weed that night, so that's nice to know. Biden was talking about having the wisdom and capacity to start on day one, which I was talking about. And I think Warren said the S word, which I think it kind of showed she was starting to get a little flustered. But to be honest, she remained very calm under all the pressure and all the attacks she was getting all night. She never seemed flustered. She might have said the S word instead of her usual, well, shoot. But besides that, it was pretty, she did good for herself. Yang and Warren were talking about whether to break up the tech companies. Yang said Bing sucks, and that breaking them up is a 20th century solution to the problem, when really we should be looking at ways, you know, because Facebook is designed to be addictive, Twitter is designed to be endlessly scrolling addictive, and we have to regulate the way these companies do business and design their apps, rather than just breaking them up and assuming that it'll all be fine. Warren said that, you know, because Amazon engages in heavily anti-competition behavior, they're acting, well, and it was very convincing. They are basically monopolizing and being way too domineering, taking over all businesses, basically. Steyer kind of came in and just tried to make a point that he will show businessman to businessman that Trump is a fraud, which I think was his strongest argument. However, I don't know. He just didn't make a case besides that that resonated with me why he should be up there, besides the fact that he paid a bunch of money to get Facebook ads and donors. Beto was talking about treating social media like a publisher instead of a utility. Booker was talking about how, well, they got into a conversation about health, and Booker was saying that Trump is the unhealthy one. Coming from the vegan, apparently he knows that. Even though being a vegan is actually not the healthiest thing for you. In the research I've done, eating less meat is certainly healthier, but eating no meat and no cheese, no dairy, that you miss a few vitamins and minerals doing that. Not a ton, but enough that it's not the healthiest thing in the world to skip out on animal products entirely. And for example, for me, I still eat meat and dairy occasionally. I do eat less because of the obvious resource concerns, but that's a podcast for another day. Harris wanted to ban Trump from Twitter because He's using it to intimidate witnesses, obstruct justice, and make racist remarks. But Warren was kind of, she didn't really know what to say to that, because, I mean, I've heard from a lot of other commentators that's a really weird hill to die on, and Warren just kind of stuck to her talking points. Yang discussed how data is more valuable than oil, and that we need control over our own data that Google and Facebook use to sell, and other companies sell it all the time, and some companies know more about us than we might even know about ourselves. They talked about abortion for the first time in these debates, which a lot of people had strong answers on defending. When it got to the Supreme Court, Biden talked about how he would do what McConnell did and block justices no matter what, basically, who were of the other party's persuasion, which I was questionable about. If you're so opposed to what McConnell was doing because it was unconstitutional and unfair, why would you then suddenly think you could do it? I mean, maybe because you know they broke the rule first, I might as well follow. I think that gets into the something that I realize might be true, wherein Democrats may be better at public policy. They might have a better idea of the issues and how to solve them. But Republicans are much better at politics, attaining and holding on to power. And I thought that was an interesting way to think about it. And Biden's argument of doing what McConnell did is kind of saying, all right, boys and girls, time to put down everything and get really strong on the politics front, even if it means abandoning some of our constitutional and public policy high grounds. But they didn't even talk about that too much. Buttigieg talked about his plan to expand the Supreme Court and make it unpolitical, wherein maybe 10 justices unanimously appoint another 5 or have rotating judges, and he didn't seem to care how it was done as long as it was done, making the Supreme Court as non-political as it was meant from the start, but never quite was. Warren was talking about how when abortion is illegal, rich women still seem to get abortions, which is kind of similar to a lot of purity arguments where very pro-life people may have a mistress, and when that mistress gets pregnant, they suddenly are in favor of the woman having the right to terminate that pregnancy. So, yeah, you might make abortion illegal for most people, but we really know that if you need one, you're going to fly somewhere else and get it yourself, because you have the money to do that. Joe Biden was talking about how he's the only one who's gotten things really big done on the stage. He said not to be vague, and we should be specific about especially how we're going to pay for a lot of our programs. And Warren made a comment that I've heard from later reporting was either seen as ungrateful and petty or kind of standing up for herself against sexism. Now, because I'm a male, I might not have seen the sexism in this. Biden was trying to make the point that he is a better candidate because he was able to go down to the Hill, get votes for Warren's Financial Protection Bureau, and he was able to bring Republicans or conservative Democrats to his side and get Warren's thing pushed through. And that's why he can do a great job as president. But I think Warren and other women might perceive that as like pulling the rug out from their own achievements. That's how they might have seen it, as a sexist attack. So I'll leave that there. I won't give them. Well, to be honest, like, I thought it was kind of ungrateful for her to then turn around and say, thanks, Obama, you know, not thank you, Biden. And it does kind of undermine the argument that it was sexism, because she immediately turned around and thanked a man. So if it really was her being upset that a man tried to take some of her accomplishment, she wouldn't turn to another man and say that he's the one who helped with the accomplishment. Do you see what I'm saying? So, or, it's, you know, it's hard to hear on that stage. She might have misinterpreted it or something. But there was a lot of contrast tonight. I know I came away from this debate with a clearer idea of the divide between the moderate and the liberal Democrats. It was hard to have a substantial debate with 12 people on stage, but they did pretty well. 4 years ago, I would have thought that conversation about the Kurds in Syria would have been a Republican debate. Kind of the way they were talking about it with such foreign policy vigor. All the talk about corporations was kind of undermined by all the CNN New York Times logos in the background. And my favorite part must have been when Bernie Sanders ruling, you know, like going against the corporations, raises his mug to take a drink of water. And it's a gigantic mug with a huge logo for CNN plastered on it. As in, it just shows the corporate influx into all of our lives. And of course, the best way to do that is to go on to Twitter and start tweeting about it, which Twitter is a company. The phone is made by a big corporation. The internet you're using is made by a big corporation. The electricity is a big corporation. Oh, I'm going to go through the individual candidates very fast. Castro, he's not coming back. I'm sorry, I don't think he's getting the polling after tonight. Tulsi Gabbard, I just listened to a podcast. David Plouffe's Campaign Headquarters, I think it's called. He had an interview with Hillary Clinton who said that Tulsi Gabbard is basically a Russian asset that might even launch a third-party campaign. A few quick things. Tulsi Gabbard's been advertised heavily on Fox News. She defends the Assad regime, which is backed by Russia. And it was kind of chilling when Hillary Clinton said that, because I think it might be true that Tulsi Gabbard may be planning a third-party run. Klobuchar did a great job tonight. Does it get her to the next debate? We'll see. I tend to think not. I don't think we're going to be seeing much more Klobuchar. Beto O'Rourke, I think he qualified already for the next one, I'm not sure, but I don't see his candidacy going anywhere. And I do have to say, I think he did a pretty good job, just not good enough to get farther in the race. Tom Steyer didn't stand out too much, and it's up to him in the next debate, which he's qualified for, to get further in the competition. Cory Booker, he raised enough money recently to stay in the race, but I don't think he stood out here tonight very much. Andrew Yang, I thought, did a fantastic job compared to his past debates and seemed to have a better grasp on tax policy, say, than the other candidates. Harris, oh my, it was kind of mixed, so I put her in a neutral spot. But when you're polling at 4-5%, neutral is not where you want to go. Pete Buttigieg did pretty, really good. And he showed a different side of him tonight, which will be interesting to see how the rest of his campaign goes. But he's definitely got the resources and the support to continue on and do well in Iowa and beyond. Bernie Sanders did fantastic as well tonight. You know, sometimes when I do cross-country races, it's after a few days of rest that I do my best in a race. And I think that's part of why Bernie had a great debate, was because he had time to rest. Some would say he had time to prepare more, but I think it's really just once you stop and breathe for a little bit, you're refreshed and you're ready for the next thing. So we'll see more of him, of course. I'm telling you, he's not going to drop out till after June or July, because that's what he did last time. Even if he's mathematically eliminated, he's going to keep going. Elizabeth Warren was attacked very toughly by most people. Two different people saw two different things that night. You were either seeing someone whose policy weaknesses were exposed for what they were, or you saw a woman defending herself from an onslaught just because she's the front runner, and she defended herself well enough for your support. So you saw it one of two ways. And then Joe Biden, he did pretty good too. Like I said, he made great points but stumbled over his words. That's kind of the theme of Joe Biden. And Klobuchar and Buttigieg kind of have his same policy opinions, except they explain it a lot better, and you saw that tonight as well. Biden ended the entire night with a Captain America-esque call for America to stand up, get up, because we can do anything. And whatever you think of Joe Biden, I think that sentiment is true. We're Americans, we can do anything, so let's get to it. Including that, you can hire Honest Politics LLC to help you become a more efficient human being by paying me to do the political work for you. I can research issues, I can watch these events and give you customized notes, that kind of stuff. Like anything a consultant would do, anything you want, you are giving a eulogy, you're giving a speech, anything, hire me to do it. I'll help you out. You can focus on the rest of your life. Go to honestpoliticsllc.com, scroll down to the bottom, and use that little box to send me a message. Whether you hate the podcast, love the podcast, or you have suggestions for future episodes, I'd also love to have you on as a guest. We can do the talk from anywhere. Just download the Anchor app and we can talk over that. So let me know if you're interested at all. We can talk about any topic you want. I can prepare for it, or we can just have a conversation. My name's Alex Gamsik, founder of Honest Politics LLC, and I'll see you next week as we continue to discover the stories behind the statistics. With my plug further aside, whatever, man. It's tired. I'm sorry. Whew.